The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
It's News Talk. It's the Pat Kenny Show. It's Anton in for Pat. When words fail, music speaks. That at least is the theory of my next guest, who's highlighting the transformative role of neurological music therapy in enhancing communications for individuals with living with neurological issues, particularly aphasia. Dr. Shane Cassidy, neuromusic therapist, joins me in studio. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Anton.
Now, aphasia, first of all, let's use that as the, sort of the straw man for broader neurological issues. Aphasia is the incapacity to effectively find the word that is appropriate in context.
To find the word. So it's a neurogenic communication disorder that can affect a person's ability to understand, ability to speak, read or write. So all aspects of communication. So I think importantly, it can affect one person very differently than the next. So it's about establishing that with a speech and language therapist, first of all, and, you know, establishing what the best route forward would be for them.
And it normally occurs because of stroke?
Generally, stroke or acquired brain injury, it can be associated with some of the progressive neurological disorders like Parkinson's or dementia, but primarily stroke and acquired brain injury.
Yeah. Explain then how music can affect it.
Okay, so we would work very closely with speech and language therapy, who would diagnose. They'd be involved in the diagnostic stage of that. And they would get their treatment plan in place. And what we would do is kind of come alongside them. And I suppose it's an add-on treatment whereby we're using rhythm and melody in a very specific way to help retrain the neural pathways for speech. So we're using singing as a way of accessing that.
So does that mean that somebody who is unable to find the word that they want to say to somebody is still able to sing lyrics?
Yeah. Absolutely. So I've actually a client later on today who is unable to phrase verbally to speak. But if we set that to music and to song, he will be extremely fluent and will be able
now,
to get
fluent
his
in a pre-existing
across.
Lyric. Or is it that if he puts what he wants to say to a melody, he can get it out?
Both.
Really?
Both. So what we would have done is we would have set kind of functional phrases. So what is it you need? I want a glass of water, for example. So those kind of basic but very important requests for his daily living, that he's actually able to request things or to turn off the light or to open the window, or those kind of basic phrases that we set to music with a specific rhythm. And all of a sudden, like if you think of a radio jingle or a jingle that you just can't get out of your head because it's so catchy, that's what we're kind of trying to do with the functional phrases, that it becomes memorable. It's that repetition as well that will build up the neural pathways. So that will make them easier to recall.
Now, when you build up the neural pathways, can you then wean the person off the melody and back into speech?
That's the aim. That's the goal. So if you think of our language center is primarily on the left side of the brain. Our singing center, which also has capacity for that verbal communication, is on the right side. So what we're trying to do is build up the pathway for that right hemisphere, for the language capable region there. So that, like you say, we're reducing the singing then to a verbal speech.
How do people react when you suggest to them that they're going to have to relearn speaking through singing? Is there skepticism?
There absolutely is. And there's a bit of nervousness, I would think, because most people come in and say, I'm not a musician, I'm not a singer, I don't sing. And like our first, we kind of laugh, we're like, I'm not a singer either, but we're just using song in a very specific way to try and help with your speech. So I think once it's explained, and that, I think that's the really important point with aphasia, intelligence is not affected by aphasia on its own. So people's understanding and cognitive abilities can be quite good. So I think once it's explained to them and the rationale behind why we're doing, why we're singing to enhance speech, I think that's the key.
It must make it a deeply frustrating affliction to deal with, that you're completely compos mentis but incapable of making your mouth do what your brain wants it to.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of our clients would experience that in their day to day, depending on their circumstance. But, you know, dealing with the public, for example, because largely if they may have other impairments, but if it's just aphasia on its own, it's an invisible disability. So as far as everyone else is concerned, they're unable to speak. But yeah, so the frustration of that being in the world and being in society and socializing and yeah.
And do you have to use melodies with which they are already familiar? Do you tap back into their own sort of musical lexicon, or can it be entirely fresh?
It's actually entirely fresh. So we've tried both. And yes, with familiar songs, with songs, pre-existing songs, it helps with that fluency and it helps with, you know, the getting the words out. But in terms of changing the words for a new phrase or for a functional phrase, what we've found is largely that a new melody works better.
How does the patient handle that with people who aren't familiar with them? Because it's one thing to say to your spouse, look, I'll be singing things for the next while till I get a handle.
Yeah.
But if you meet a stranger and burst into song to communicate with them...
Well, actually, that's one of our phrases. So often when people come to us, we kind of say, I've had a stroke, I have aphasia. So we'll actually, that would be one of the first phrases, depending on where they're at and what level they're at, if that's appropriate. That might be one of the first phrases so that they can actually express that to a stranger or to whoever it is that they're in.
And how is music therapy treated within the kind of multidisciplinary teams that support stroke patients? Because it isn't classical clinical, it isn't a classical clinical response, I would have thought.
No, it's not yet. I say yet in hope that it will be. So say, for example, in the UK for the last 54 years, it has been part of the multidisciplinary team. So we're catching up here, but we are lucky in that we do have, we're part of interdisciplinary teams, say, for example, in the National Rehabilitation Hospital, in the Royal Hospital in Donnybrook. So I'm very lucky and I'd be remiss to leave the speech and language therapy teams from both hospitals out of it because I've learned so much from them. But we work very closely with them, with people with aphasia.
What's your hope in relation to music therapy as a treatment, both in terms of uptake and what you are learning from it?
Well, I think both from a public and also from a health sector perspective that it would be established as part of interdisciplinary teams. I suppose that the exposure, that the impact of it would be highlighted. You know, there's a very, very strong and robust evidence base supporting it. So for that to actually be highlighted and accepted and for that to transpire then into specific music therapy roles.
On the topic of the evidence base, it is one thing to establish an evidence base that shows that it is efficacious. It's another to show how it's efficacious. Is the mechanism understood?
We're getting there. Yeah. Like, I mean, from our perspective, it is. But maybe from a public perspective, it's not. I think looking in on a music therapy session, sometimes it can look like we're playing instruments or we're singing songs, as opposed to, well, actually, we're trying to retrain the pathways here from speaking to singing. So that can sometimes be the challenge as to how it's perceived.
Text to ask, would music therapy suit an 11-year-old child who has quite a bad stammer? We've tried speech and language therapy, but it didn't really work. The stutter is one that runs in the family, so a lot of us have it, but this child's is getting worse.
Yeah, so I think there are a few things there. And a colleague of mine, Jess O'Donoghue, who actually did her PhD study around adolescents with a stammer. And she found that, A, there were actually two aspects, because the stress, frustration and anxiety surrounding that, first of all, because obviously music is such a ready-made modality to have that non-verbal interaction, first of all, but then actually working on the stammer itself. So certainly worth exploring.
If people want to find out more about music therapy, are there any good resources you'd recommend?
They can visit our website, which is neuralinks.ie. They can get in touch if they have any specific questions. It's hello@neuralinks.ie. If they're from around the country, there is icat.ie is where you'll find a list of music therapists operating in different areas of
But
Ireland.
Is becoming that much the norm that it is all the way around the country? There are multiple people doing this.
It's getting there. Yeah, there are approximately 100 of us, I believe, in Ireland. So, yeah, it's growing.
Fascinating, Shane. Thank you very much. That is Dr. Shane Cassidy, who is neuro music therapist.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.